Okay, so we're diving deep today into State v. Veal, this case out of New Hampshire.
Fascinating case.
It is. On the surface, it seems like just a local dispute. You know, some oak trees got cut down.
Right.
But it really spirals out to this much bigger question of how do we determine if someone is competent to stand trial at all?
Exactly. And not only that, but what rights do they have during that process? You know, are they being treated fairly? And then, you know, what happens afterward? The stigma.
Yeah, the stigma of being labeled incompetent. And we've got some great material to work with here. We've got the court's ruling, obviously, which kind of lays out the whole story and the decision. We've got some really detailed briefs that go into the arguments from both sides. And you even included some, like, podcast guidance that was part of your research.
Yeah, it's always fun to peek behind the curtain, right? See how their folks are breaking down these complex cases.
I think it's really helpful for our listeners. You know, it shows how we're thinking about this stuff, how we're trying to connect the dots. And looking at all of this, it seems like the real core of this case is about striking a balance.
A balance.
Yeah. Between fairness, you know, ensuring due process for everyone, but also the practical realities of running the legal system.
Absolutely. You can't have one without the other, right? It's about finding that sweet spot where individual rights are protected, but the wheels of justice can still turn effectively.
Exactly. And Veal forces us to ask some really tough questions about whether our system is actually achieving that balance.
Right. It challenges us to think critically about whether the procedures in place are truly safeguarding individual rights, even in what might seem like a minor case at first glance.
And that's what makes his deep dive so compelling. So the case involves Scott Veal. He's a real estate broker, and he ends up facing charges for illegally cutting down, as we said, these oak trees. But this isn't some clear-cut case of someone knowingly trespassing. He genuinely believed, like truly believed, he owned those trees.
Right. And that belief, that ownership, it was central to his entire defense and ultimately to the questions about his competency.
Okay, so let's unpack that. We've got this timber trespass case. We've got Veal, who's adamant that he's done nothing wrong. He's convinced he owns the property, therefore the trees are his. Where do we go from there?
Well, this is where things start to get a little messy. It's not just about the trees anymore, right? It's about Veal's perception of reality and how that clashes with the legal system itself.
Because he's so convinced about the property, he ends up accusing his own public defenders, the people who are supposed to be on his side.
Right, of conspiring against him.
A huge accusation.
Absolutely. Imagine you're in a legal battle and you believe the very people tasked with defending you are actually working against you. Talk about a breakdown in trust, right?
Yeah, that's got to be devastating for any defendant. So not surprisingly, that complete lack of trust triggers the court to call for competency evaluations.
Right. They need to figure out, can this guy even participate in his own defense, given these, well, let's call them unusual beliefs.
So they bring in not one, but two mental health professionals. And this is where it gets even more interesting.
Because they disagree.
Completely. So the psychiatrist diagnoses Veal with a paranoid disorder, but says, hey, he's competent to stand trial. But then the forensic psychologist comes in, diagnoses delusions, and is like, nope. He's incompetent.
The real head scratcher for the court, right? You've got two qualified experts, and they're coming to completely opposite conclusions.
So how does a judge even begin to sort through that?
Well, this is where the judge's role as a neutral fact finder becomes so, so important. They have to look at everything. The experts' qualifications, the methods they used, the reasoning behind their opinions. It's like sifting through layers of complexity.
And in the end, the trial court sides with the psychologist, finding Veal incompetent. Not only that, they determine his competency can't be restored, you know, brought back to a level where he could stand trial.
Which is a huge decision because it leads to the criminal charges being dismissed.
Right. And you can see why this raises eyebrows. I mean, on the one hand, someone's allegedly had their trees cut down, but they don't get their day in court because the defendant can't participate in a meaningful way.
Yeah, it really highlights that inherent tension, right? Between ensuring a fair trial, which requires competency, and the state's interest in upholding the law, in seeing justice served, and, you know, for the alleged victims to have their grievances addressed.
But the story doesn't end there. Veal, acting pro se, meaning he represented himself, files an appeal. He argues ineffective assistance of counsel, and that the whole process that led to him being declared incompetent violated his due process rights.
So he's found incompetent to stand trial, but he's competent enough to challenge that very finding.
It seems paradoxical, right? But it just goes to show how complicated these situations can be. An individual might be deemed incompetent in one context, but still have the capacity to engage with the legal system in other ways.
Makes you think about what competency really means, doesn't it? It's not always so black and white.
And Veal's pro se appeal leads to the New Hampshire Supreme Court stepping in, and they remand the case, send it back to the trial court.
With instructions.
Yeah, they tell the trial court to take another look at that ineffective assistance of counsel claim. But even after that second look, the trial court again rejects Veal's argument.
So essentially, they're saying that despite the really difficult situation, his public defenders did what they could, given the circumstances.
Exactly. And you know, think about it. You're a public defender, you're assigned to this case, and your client is convinced you're part of some conspiracy against him.
Yeah, talk about an uphill battle.
Right. So the court recognizes that the breakdown in communication, the lack of trust, wasn't really the lawyer's fault. It stemmed from Veal's own beliefs.
And that leads us to the heart of this deep dive, right? The core legal question, procedural due process, and specifically the stigma of being found incompetent. Veal's argument on further appeal becomes about whether that whole process violated his rights, particularly because of the potential consequences of that label, you know, incompetent.
Right. And this is where it gets really interesting for anyone who's interested in legal rights, because the argument is that the stigma itself, the label, is a form of harm, a violation of his due process.
And it's a powerful argument, right? Because even though he's not being confined or forced into treatment, there's still a real social and potentially legal cost to being declared incompetent.
And the New Hampshire Supreme Court, they ultimately uphold the trial court's decision. But they don't dismiss Veal's concerns. They actually acknowledge the impact on his reputation, even going so far as to call it liberty interest under state law.
Which is significant, right? They're acknowledging that a person's reputation, their standing in the community, is something that the law should protect.
But they also say that the procedures that are already in place for competency determinations meet the flexible standards of due process. You know, they point to the evaluations by the mental health professionals, the hearings conducted by the judge, the possibility of appealing the decision.
So it's not about creating new rules, but ensuring the existing ones are robust enough to safeguard individual rights.
Exactly. And to figure that out, they use this three-factor balancing test from Matthews v. Eldridge. It's this pretty well-established way of analyzing due process claims.
Right. It's about weighing the individual's interest, the risk of error in the procedures, and the government's interest in, like, efficiency, not bogging down the system.
And the court basically concludes that those safeguards, the evaluations, the judicial review, they minimize the risk of an incorrect finding. They didn't see a need to add extra steps, like a full-blown adversarial hearing where Veal could, you know, cross-examine the experts himself, especially given his distrust of lawyers in general. They put a lot of faith in the judge's role as a neutral fact finder.
They're essentially saying the judge, after hearing all the evidence, is capable of determining whether the competency finding is justified, even if the experts disagree.
And going back to that ineffective assistance of counsel claim, the court found no violation of that Strickland standard that we use to evaluate attorney performance. They understood the tough spot Veal's lawyers were in, given his accusations.
Right. It's almost like the court is saying, look, there's only so much you can do when your client is actively working against you.
It's a good reminder that effective legal representation requires a certain level of cooperation from the client.
Definitely. Without trust and communication, it becomes nearly impossible for a lawyer to build a solid defense.
And I think it's really crucial here to emphasize the difference between competency, what we've been talking about, and legal insanity. These are two separate things, and they often get confused.
It's an important distinction to make. Competency focuses on the here and now. Can the person understand the legal process right now and work with their lawyer? Insanity is about the defendant's state of mind when the alleged crime happened. Did they know what they were doing?
So Veal's delusions about his lawyers, they impacted his ability to participate in his own defense at that moment. But they don't automatically mean he was legally insane when he cut down those trees.
It's a question of timing and mental state, two separate legal concepts with different implications.
Absolutely. So let's zoom out a bit and talk about what State v. Veal means for all of us. For anyone in the legal field, this case really shows how important thorough evaluations are in competency hearings and how critical it is to have a clear record of the expert's findings and the court's reasoning.
Mm.
That disagreement between the psychiatrist and the psychologist highlights why we need those detailed justifications.
Absolutely. The record of the competency hearing is crucial for both transparency and accountability within the system.
And I think it's pretty clear that courts, they're going to stick with procedures that balance fairness with practicality. You know, they're not going to reinvent the wheel every time a question about stigma comes up.
Yeah, the court affirmed the adequacy of the existing framework, the process in place. While acknowledging the potential for stigma, they didn't feel it was necessary to create a whole new set of rules.
Which really underscores that whole idea of due process not being some rigid checklist, but rather a flexible principle. The Veal case really shows us that in action.
It's about weighing the individual's rights against the system's needs. And the court's application of the Matthews test illustrates how they try to find that balance.
And even when an individual's reputation is on the line, and the court here recognized that as a protected liberty interest, the existing safeguards, if they're seen as adequate, might be enough to satisfy due process. So just the potential for stigma alone, that doesn't automatically mean we need more procedures.
It's a nuanced point. The court recognized the harm of stigma, but also set a kind of threshold. The procedures need to be demonstrably inadequate in preventing an erroneous finding before we start adding more layers of complexity.
So it leaves us with a question to ponder. Are there certain types of stigma that should warrant a higher level of scrutiny? You know, should the consequences of that label, beyond just reputation, factor into the due process analysis?
That's a great question. What if a finding of incompetence had very specific legal ramifications, like automatically losing a professional license? That's a tangible consequence that goes beyond just like social stigma. Would that change the equation?
Exactly. And that's something for everyone to consider. State v. Veal, at its core, began with some cut-down trees, but evolved into this really complex exploration of individual rights, legal procedures, and the weight of labels. It's a reminder that the law is constantly being interpreted and applied in the real world, and engaging with those nuances is what makes someone a truly informed legal mind.
It shows that the law is rarely black and white. It's full of gray areas, and navigating those gray areas responsibly requires careful consideration of the impact our decisions have on people's lives.
So that's State v. Veal, folks. A case that prompts us to think critically about the intersection of competency, due process, and the enduring power of legal labels.
It's a case that reminds us that the law is a living, breathing thing, constantly evolving and adapting to the complexities of human experience.